Brahma, just follow this conclusion by fixed concentration of mind, and no pride will disturb you, neither in the partial nor in the final devastation. Purport. As in the Bhagavad Gita 10th chapter, the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, has summarized the whole text in four verses, namely, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavaha, etc. So the complete Srimad Bhagavatam has also been summarized in four verses as Ahameva Sameva Agre, etc. Thus the secret purpose of the most important Bhagavatite conclusion has been explained by the original speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam, who was also the original speaker of the Bhagavad Gita, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. There are many grammarians and non-devotee material wranglers who have tried to present false interpretations of these four verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but the Lord himself advised Brahmaji not to be deviated from the fixed conclusion the Lord had taught him. The Lord was the teacher of the nucleus of Srimad Bhagavatam in four verses, and Brahma was the receiver of the knowledge. Misinterpretation of the word aham by the word jugglery of the impersonalist should not disturb the mind of the strict followers of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the text of the personality of Godhead and his unalloyed devotees, who are also known as the Bhagavats, and any outsider should have no access to this confidential literature of devotional service. But unfortunately, the impersonalist, who has no relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sometimes tries to interpret Srimad Bhagavatam by his poor fund of knowledge in grammar and dry speculation. Therefore, the Lord warns Brahma, and through Brahma, all future devotees of the Lord in the disciplic succession of Brahma, that one should never be misled by the conclusion of the so-called grammarians or by other men with a poor fund of knowledge, but must always fix the mind properly via the parampara system. No one should try to give a new interpretation by dint of mundane knowledge. And the first step, therefore, in pursuance of the system of knowledge received by Brahma, is to approach a bona fide guru who is the representative of the Lord following the parampara system. No one should try to squeeze out his own meaning by imperfect mundane knowledge. The guru or the bona fide spiritual master is competent to teach the disciple in the right path with reference to the context of all authentic Vedic literature. He does not attempt to juggle words to bewilder the student. The bona fide spiritual master, by his personal activities, teaches the disciple the principles of devotional service. Without personal service, one would go on speculating like the impersonalists and dry speculators life after life and would be unable to reach the final conclusion. By following the instructions of the bona fide spiritual master in conjunction with the principles of revealed scriptures, the student will rise to the plane of complete knowledge, which will be exhibited by development of detachment from the world of sense gratification. The mundane wranglers are surprised that one can detach himself from the world of sense gratification, and thus any attempt to be fixed in God realization appears to them to be mysticism. This detachment from the sensory world is called the Brahma-Bhuta stage of realization, the preliminary stage of transcendental devotional life, Parabhaktihi. The Brahma-Bhuta stage of life is also known as the Atmarama stage, in which one is fully self-satisfied and does not hanker for the world of sense enjoyment. This stage of full satisfaction is the proper situation for understanding the transcendental knowledge of the personality of Godhead. The Srimad Bhagavatam affirms this. Evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. Thus, in the completely satisfied stage of life, exhibited by full detachment from the world of sense enjoyment as a result of performing devotional service, one can understand the science of God in a liberated stage. In this stage of full satisfaction and detachment from the sensory world, one can know the mystery of the science of God with all its confidential intricacies, and not by grammar or academic speculation. Because Brahma qualified himself for such reception, the Lord was pleased to disclose the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. This direct instruction by the Lord to any devotee who is detached from the world of sense gratification is possible, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Teshang satta yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam api antite. Unto the devotees who are constantly engaged in the Lord's transcendental loving service, priti purvakam, the Lord, out of his causeless mercy upon the devotee, gives direct instructions so that the devotees may make accurate progress on the path returning home back to Godhead. One should not therefore try to understand these four verses of Srimad Bhagavatam by mental speculation. Rather, by direct perception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is able to know all about his abode, Vaikuntha, as was seen and experienced by Brahmaji. Such Vaikuntha realization is possible by any devotee of the Lord, situated in the transcendental position as a result of devotional service. In the Gopala Tapani Upanishad, Shruti, it is said, Gopavesho me purushaf purastad avibhabhuva. The Lord appeared before Brahma as a cowboy, that is, as the original personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, Govinda, who is later described by Brahmaji in his Brahma Samhita. Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu Kalpa Vriksha Laksha Briteshu Surapira Vipalayanta Lakshmi Sahasra Shata Sambrahma Sevivanam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Brahmaji desires to worship the original personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, who resides in the topmost Vaikuntha planet known as Goloka Vrindavan, where he is in the habit of keeping Surabhi cows as a cowboy, and where he is served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, the gopis, with love and respect. Therefore, Lord Sri Krishna is the original form of the Supreme Lord, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. This is also clear from this instruction. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Krishna, and not directly Narayana or the Purusha Avatars, which are subsequent manifestations. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam means consciousness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the sound representation of the Lord as much as the Bhagavad Gita is. Thus, the conclusion is that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the science of the Lord in which the Lord and his abode are perfectly realized. Etan natang samatishta paramena samatina bhavan kalpa vikalpa shuha navimohiti kahichit. O Brahma, just follow this conclusion by fixed concentration of mind, and no pride will disturb you, neither in the partial nor in the final devastation. Srimad Bhagavatam, as Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport, is meant for the devotees. It's not meant for the non-devotees. Now, why is that? The Bhagavatam is the book for giving knowledge of the personality of Godhead, and every jiva has a relationship, eternal relationship with the personality of Godhead. But nevertheless, some are known as devotees and some are known as non-devotees. Devotees are those who recognize the relationship with the Supreme Lord, and non-devotees are those who deny the relationship with the Supreme Lord, or they deny there is even a Supreme Lord to have a relationship with. So here, Prabhupada writes that any outsider should have no access to this confidential literature of devotional service. It reminds us of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performing nocturnal kirtan at the residence of Srivas Thakur in Navadvip every night. But they were very strict that no outsider should be allowed in. Later, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of his own volition, took the Sankirtan party out into the streets of Navadvip. That came when the Qazi banned Kirtan, no more Kirtan. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the, he did call all the devotees that will show the Qazi what is Kirtan. So the, all the devotees who were previously accustomed to performing Sankirtan within their homes joined together and went with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in this way he brought Sankirtan to the streets of Navadvip Dham. But in the beginning, it wasn't allowed, only for the devotees. On two occasions, non-devotees were allowed to clandestinely watch Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kirtan, watch his dancing. But in both cases, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu felt there's something wrong here, something not right. He could understand in both cases that there were non-devotees present, and therefore he didn't feel the natural ecstasy that comes from chanting Hare Krishna. So this gives us some clue. Why did he ban the people from coming? Many people wanted to see. Of course, among the many people who wanted to see, there are many who wanted to, they would see and criticize and laugh. So they're seeing because they have the wrong attitude. And by seeing the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that wouldn't actually benefit them. They'd become offensive. Of course, anyone who sees the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has to be benefited. But on the one hand, they're a disturbance to the Lord, who is the supreme enjoyer, but who has taken the role of the servant, and who is indirectly enjoying kirtan ras. Devotee is not an enjoyer. The Supreme Lord is the enjoyer. Devotee means one who recognizes that the Supreme Lord is the enjoyer. We are to be enjoyed. Nevertheless, Srila Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness to us that you enjoy Krishna prasadam. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But we should understand on what platform that happiness is. The happiness is that one doesn't eat prasad like one eats ordinary food and thinks, oh, how tasty it is. I'm enjoying so much. But one accepts in the mode of service and becomes happy that Krishna has been served so nicely. So a devotee, he completely gives up the mood of an enjoyer that is antithetical to pure devotional service. But nevertheless, he enjoys the happiness of being a servant of Krishna. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to dance with all the devotees who were chanting Hare Krishna in the mood of service to Krishna. In everything we do, as aspiring devotees of the Lord. Sometimes we hear devotees say, well, I became a devotee 10 years ago. So if they say that, I say, you're very lucky. You became a devotee, I'm still trying. It's not such an easy thing to be a devotee. Once when a Prabhupada's disciple sent a He composed a poem, and he sent it to Prabhupada, for Prabhupada to check it. And Prabhupada said, it's okay, but within the poem, you always refer to yourself as O Krishna, your devotee is calling out to you. Prabhupada said, better you say your servant, because the position of a devotee is a very high position. One shouldn't presume, I have bhakti. I have it wrapped up in a box. I'm in possession of it. I can control. I know everything about bhakti. But one should think, I'm aspiring to be a devotee and cultivate the mood of a servant. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was happy to chant Hare Krishna with others who were in that mood of being a servant. They weren't there to enjoy the kirtan, although they experienced the highest bliss from engaging in kirtan. And they relished that. But that relish comes not from considering that this is something for me to enjoy, but that we should chant Hare Krishna for the pleasure of Krishna. And if we do that, then automatically we ourselves will feel happy. Because service to Krishna is executed by the via medium of Krishna's Swarupa Shakti, otherwise known as his Haladini Shakti, his internal energy or his bliss potency. So, because service is meant to give Krishna pleasure, but automatically we get pleasure. Yasmin tushte jagat tushte. Krishna satisfied the whole world can be satisfied. So one, if one is directly trying to please Krishna, then automatically he himself becomes happy. However, if that happiness is an obstacle to his service, because his aim is service, not happiness, then he condemns that happiness. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the example is given of Dharaka, a servant of Krishna, who was fanning him. While fanning him, he became stunned in ecstasy, thinking, oh, I'm so fortunate to be able to fan Krishna. But then he cursed the ecstatic symptom of becoming stunned. And what's the use of this? I'm becoming stunned, I'm experiencing the ecstasy, but Krishna's service is stopped because I can't move. So that's the attitude of the devotees who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed kirtan with. And that was exemplified by Srivas Thakur himself on the night that his own son died during the kirtan. And they heard some, while the kirtan was going on, Srivas heard some sound from inside the woman's quarters. He went to see what had happened. Oh, what happened? Your son has died. He said, well, just don't make so much noise. Don't disturb Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kirtan. He was more concerned that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kirtan not be disturbed, that his own son had died. So he went back and joined the kirtan. After some time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that something unfortunate happened to him. Do you know anything about that, Srivas? Something inauspicious. It seems something inauspicious has happened within this house. Do you know what happens, Srivas? And Srivas said that, Prabhu, with you present, how can there be any misfortune? Everything is most fortunate. And the Lord again asked, but is there something? He said, well, my son did. He said, then why didn't you tell? Because we didn't want to disturb your kirtan. Why should we disturb your kirtan? Every day so many people die. But why should we disturb your kirtan? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with Srivas's attitude. And so he and Nityananda Prabhu offered themselves to be sons of Srivas Thakur. He said, you lost one, you gained two. So This is the intimate dealing of the Lord with His devotees, which is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, not in these four verses of the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, which have just been spoken of. It's not given in such detail, but the whole Bhagavatam is concerned with the dealings of the Lord and His devotees. So it's not something that the non-devotees can understand. The non-devotees, they also have love stories, Krishna Leela, love story, Krishna and Radha, which is actually so elevated that it's only alluded to within Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not explicitly, it's not explicated. Explicated means explained in detail. So, his dealings with the gopis, they're not described in Srimad Bhagavatam in detail. But it's very clear from the Bhagavatam itself that this is a book of rasa, of dealings between the Lord and His devotees. Pibhata Bhagavata rasam alayam muhuraho rasika bhuvibhavaka. Beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam states that we should go on drinking this bhakti rasa even up to the time of the devastation of this universe, if we happen to be around so long. This is relishable by the rasika, the devotees who are absorbed in relishing the pure rasa. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not meant for non-devotees who they can also become expert in studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. They can also, by study, a non-devotee, if he studied sufficient time, he could write all about bhakti ras, as is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can have good theoretical knowledge of it. But one who does not enter into the spirit of Krishna consciousness cannot understand this. And it is the great mistake of mundane scholars to think that they can understand Srimad Bhagavatam in a similar way to that they understand any other book. There are students of philosophy and literature who they go through the pages of famous novels and writings and they try to find themes and they express this in their own writings, how, for instance, they might write how Tolstoy and Dickens, they pointed out the inequity within society, and thus they were also closet communists. So they may come to some conclusion. They study, they're expert in studying literature. So one may be expert in studying literature, but that in itself is not a qualification to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. And if one thinks that Srimad Bhagavatam is just another book that is to be analyzed according to the rules of literary criticism, then he is greatly misunderstood. Because even though Bhagavatam, it's not outside the scope of bhakti that there be literary criticism. And indeed, the greatest acharyas, they give commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam and other books. They provide the perspective by which we can understand the message of Bhagavatam. So it's not that literary criticism is banned, but literary criticism on the basis of mundane principles, that is condemned. That if we think that by the ordinary rational or logical system we can understand Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavatas, the pure devotees, then definitely we've misunderstood. And we must misunderstand. We will presume when we're reading about Lord Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we'll presume that they are ordinary persons. How many times have we heard that someone is saying that Krishna was just an ordinary man, or he was a great philosopher, or a politician, or a prince, or putting mundane persons, or mundane, trying to ascribe mundane motivations to Krishna. So we find that also, the mundane scholars, they'll say things like, well, you see this Nimai Pandit, it's described that he would jump in the air and then fall on the ground with foam coming from his mouth, and they'll say he was an epileptic. So, because they cannot admit, there's so much atheistic, they cannot admit to even the possibility of there being a platform of transcendental ecstasy, which is beyond that which they know. So, this kind of scholarship, is it useless or worse than useless? It's difficult to say. It certainly isn't very helpful. It won't help us to become Krishna conscious. Even if we become very knowledgeable in the... One can be very knowledgeable in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and not practice it at all. Or not practicing it seriously. That means we just take it as something to study. One who takes it as a subject of study, then they become as if it were, they're trying to take the position of the master of this knowledge. Yes, I shall learn, I shall get my PhD. I become a master of philosophy. So they want to become the master of this knowledge. Whereas a devotee, he may be very learned and maybe more or less learn the same things as the mundane scholar does about the Gita, Bhagavatam, and other main literatures. But his knowledge, the knowledge that the devotee has of Shastra, that is directly a gift from the Swarup Shakti of the Supreme Lord. He is inspired by that Swarup Shakti of the Lord to not only have the knowledge, not only the theoretical knowledge of how Krishna is the Supreme Lord and we're all related to Him, but the practical knowledge of how to act in that relationship to please Krishna, which is the ultimate point of everything that's being stated here. Somehow or other, the non-devotees, they get it all wrong. Or even if they get it right, they'll say, you see, in the Gaudiya school, they believe that everything should be done for the pleasure of Krishna. But they won't do it themselves. Or even if they superficially become glorious. There was one woman from the West, some research scholar, and she was staying in Vrindavan studying the Radharaman Goswamis. And eventually her name was changed. She was initiated and her name was changed and she became a disciple. You could say she stopped becoming a mundane scholar and became a devotee. Well, kind of, because that contamination of being a mundane scholar continues. It's very difficult to overcome, to stop thinking that Krishna is a subject of my study and to fully submit oneself to Krishna, which is the purpose of the Bhagavatam. Of course, we don't have many mundane scholars here, sitting here in this class. But we should be aware, Prabhupada has pointed out here in the purport, and he repeatedly points out, that such persons, they cannot help us in our understanding of Krishna. Maybe they know some facts and figures about various facets of Vedic culture which could be helpful in our understanding of Krishna consciousness, just like I see devotees, some devotees who are very interested in establishing Varnashram Dharma or further going deeper into understanding Srila Prabhupada's many directives on this matter. Of course, not just Srila Prabhupada's, but those from Shastra. So Prabhupada wasn't inventing anything. So I see that, or I know that some of them read one book called Hindu Dharma by Sri Chandrasekharendran Saraswati, who's the now deceased famous Kanchi Shankaracharya, who his knowledge of Hindu dharma or Varnashram dharma was very much colored by the idea that it should be by birth only. But nevertheless, he had some good insights into the workings of Varnashram, which in the hands of a competent devotee who's fixed in understanding Shastra according to the Vaishnava understanding, that's useful to consider without being bewildered by it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned us not to read Mayavadi books, but then you see the Jiva Goswami and others, they must have read them. Otherwise, how could they write their own books to counteract the arguments of the Mayavadis? So someone should know what they say. Otherwise, to counteract what they're saying, you can't do it unless someone knows. That's a specialized service. That's not for everyone. But actual understanding of Bhakti Ras, one can't understand this one's devotee. Actual understanding of anything in Shastra, just like we say that this Mayavadi, he had some understanding into the practical dynamics of historical Varnashram. But then what's the point of Varnashram? That Varnashram Acharavan, no, what is that? Dvija Shrestha, Atapkumbhya Dvija Shrestha. Varnashrama vibhagashaha svanushtitasya dharmasya sansidhya haritoshanam. That the whole purpose of Varnashrama is to satisfy Hari. That they don't understand. So one has to be very careful dealing with these various non-devotees' knowledge. In some way, the non-devotees, the scholars, They can indirectly help for devotees by their research. They can uncover different things. Someone was commenting that in the Madhva Sampradaya, so many of their manuscripts were being lost. The Madhvas themselves were not taking proper care of so many of their manuscripts, and then some foundation from America, some scholars funded by a foundation in America, Monday University scholars, they took up the task of collecting these decaying manuscripts, whatever were left, and photographing them, and thus preserving them for the sake of posterity. So it may be said that, well, you see, you criticize these scholars, but they did what you should have been doing. Well, that's true, in one sense. But then the Madhvas who should have been maintaining those, preserving those manuscripts, they would preserve them for the sake of presenting the legacy of Madhvacharya as he presented it, or as Jayatirtha presented it, according to the Acharya system. Whereas the mundane scholars, they desire to preserve it, not because they think that what Madhvacharya says is true, or it's the aid for the means for persons to understand Krishna, which is the only purpose of life, but they think that Madhvacharya is an important historical scholar. So for the sake of preserving his opinion or some cultural facet, it should be preserved. So what they did was good, and devotees can take advantage of that. But their reason for doing it is totally antithetical to everything devotees stand for. So we shouldn't be bewildered and think that, well, you see, the mundane scholars, they're better than the devotional scholars, because, you see, they understood the importance of these manuscripts, which even the Madhvas themselves didn't do. They didn't understand the importance. They ascribed importance to it for exactly for the wrong reasons, for exactly the reasons that go against everything that devotees stand for. Devotees, they accept the knowledge of Shastra and the Acharyas, the Amnayavani, as worshipable, whereas the mundane scholars, they consider it something studyable or preservable. But they study people who worship, but they don't worship themselves. That's below their dignity. Or even if they make some semblance of worship, like I was saying, this scholar became initiated in the Radharaman line. But her writing, it's all indelibly influenced by the mundane outlook. She can never stop considering herself an examiner, rather than presenting herself to be examined by the Supreme Lord and the Acharyas. So everything should be understood very clearly. Those who are devotees, they are favored to understand this knowledge. Here, Prabhupada writes about the Mayavadis, how they tried by mundane word jugglery, they squeeze out some wrong meaning. And we say, well, not that bad, you see, just like we say the name of this Chandrasekharendran, he's a highly respected sadhu, definitely. He was a sadhu. inasmuch as he was dedicated to Vedic knowledge, highly learned, very strict in following all the principles that he did. He didn't travel all over the world because he adhered to the principle of only walking anywhere. So, he based in Kanji, he didn't go, generally didn't go much further than Chennai, which is, you know, a few days' journey. So he was highly respected, and you can say that, well, in some way the Mayavadis have done some good things. Shankaracharya, he drove Buddhism out of India and restored the Vedic culture. And the Mayavadis, they also respect Krishna. They appreciate devotees chanting the names of Krishna. They're against cow slaughter. They believe in following the ancient Hindu rituals, which we also do. So you could say in many ways it's good. And yeah, just like India, it's a better place for preaching Krishna consciousness because people, they have the attitude to do so, and that attitude to do so has been upheld throughout history, not only by the Vaishnava Acharyas, but even by non-Vaishnava. Not all, but just like I say, the Mayavadis, they'll also say, yes, yes, worship of Krishna is very good. So, indirectly, you could say they're upholding the Vedic culture, which is better than the non-Vedic cultures, where in the Western countries, people think this idea of cow protection is something very strange. They think it's like a joke. They talk about, there's a saying called a sacred cow. In English, there's a saying, sacred cow. It means something that people, they're very much attached to, but for no reason. It's just stupid. So, that comes from the Hindu idea that, why is a cow sacred? It's just an animal, and you know, you take milk from it, and then you kill it and eat it. And what's a sacred cow? It's just ridiculous. That's what they think. But the Mayavadis also, they appreciate, or even the Jains for that matter, who are not, you know, they're not even Hindus. But they're very strong and should not be cow killing. So to some extent you can say yes, it's probably better to be a Mayavadi than to be a Christian cow eater. Even though the Christians theoretically believe in God, that there's a supreme controller, and the Mayavadis, they're Anishvara. They don't, well, they say there's Ishvara, but ultimately their idea of Ishvara is, he's not the absolute reality. So Prabhupada, when he was asked about that, and he said it was better to be a worshipper of the demigods than to be a Christian, because the demigods, at least they're within the Vedic culture. Whereas the Christians, they aren't. So the Vedic culture, it's a useful background for piety and the principles that are supportive of Krishna consciousness. Or cow protection is not only supportive of Krishna consciousness, it's very much part of Krishna consciousness. But because they do it for the wrong reason, the Mayavadis are also condemned by the Vaishnavas. They do the right thing. They do the right things for the wrong reason. And they ultimately end up being offensive to Krishna, which is never auspicious. So we're studying this Bhagavatam to understand what is the right thing to do and what's the right reason for doing it. Not just like in Bengal, there's the idea that, yeah, you chant Hare Krishna, everything. That's all you need to do, and then you don't need to. You see, if you chant Hare Krishna, everything comes from that. But what about eating fish? Well, that doesn't matter. You can do that also, no harm. So they don't have the full or proper idea. So one has to have the full and proper understanding by, as has been stated in the previous one, etavat eva jigyasyam. What is that? Tatva? Oh, so many, 13 pages ahead. Tatva jigyasunatmaha anvyarvyati rekhabhyam yat syat sarvatra sarvada. Directly, indirectly, one should understand all the points, the subtle points, the nuances of this Vaishnava philosophy. If we take it something very shallow, then our understanding will be shallow. Just like that in the last few days I've been saying that. If we ask everyone, do you want Krishna to pray? Everyone say, Jai, put their hand up. They say, are you ready to do what is prepared, what is required to get Krishna pray? It's not just a matter of putting your hand up and saying Jai, but are we ready to give up sense gratification in all its gross and subtle forms? That's more important for us to consider. Then, if we are considered to do that for the sake of serving Krishna, Krishnarte Bhogatyag, accepting or rejecting things on the basis of whether or not it's pleasing to Krishna, then Krishna Prem will be the result. It's not just a matter of saying Jai. It's not such a cheap thing. It's, buy 500 rupees worth of petrol and get a free gift. It's not such a cheap thing. Krishna Prem. Win the lottery. What did you get? Krishna Prem. It's not such a cheap thing. The underlying basis of praying is sharanagati, full surrender to the Lord. So these are some of the points being made here, and I'm going to finish here for today. Is there any question? No, so we'll finish. All right, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.